that's the biggest problem with commercial farming, is that we put animals on a human schedule, not an animal schedule. Anyone who says that like a vegetarian or vegan diet, whatever, are like cruelty free or like death free, don't have any concept of what farming is. You can really kind of pull the curtain back and say, hey, this is who I am in my real life. And this is what I believe and this is what I do. And sometimes it's something that you want to see and sometimes it's not. When I first saw him, he was in perfect shooting lane. Like, it was absolutely perfect. But I had my phone in my hand, not my crossbow. The animals are only going to do what animals do. It's the humans that can decide to either put them in a natural state or an unnatural state. This is Raymond Rowe, professional wrestler, also known as Eric from the Viking Raiders, and you're listening to The Wild Initiative.
Put down your latte and pull on your boots.
There's a lot of people that can pull the trigger on an animal, but they don't know what to do with it after.
If you would have told me that a stupid turkey was going to make me get that excited, I'd have told you you were crazy.
It's just a skill that you have to perfect over a lot of years.
Hunting is a tribal activity. We've lost the tribe. We can't even hunt together anymore.
Well, the people that are anti-hunting are usually pro-abortion. So kill the people, save the animals.
I just remember riding my horse back to camp with the Northern Lights and the moose behind me, and I'm like, this is why I've done this. This is as cool as an experience as I will get.
Hi, this is Jim Shockey.
This is Sam Sohol, the public land bus guy.
Hi, I'm Kimmy Greentree.
Hi, this is South Cox with the Western Bowhunter Podcast.
Hey, this is Ben Dedamonte, a.k.a. Shed Crazy.
You're listening to The Wild Initiative.
Hey, all, welcome to another episode of The Wild Initiative, brought to you as part of the Waypoint Podcast Network.
Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
All right, y'all. So hopping into today's episode, I have a bit of a unique guest with me today. Today I have joining me Raymond Rowe. Those of you who are familiar with professional wrestling may know him as Eric of the Viking Raiders. Raymond is a homesteader, a hunter, a professional wrestler, got a lot of stuff going on, a fairly new father. And I'm super excited to have you on. So thank you so much for joining me, man.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
And like we were discussing earlier, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day. I know you've kind of been trying to rescue your wife, Sarah, a little bit since you do have to travel for work. So I appreciate it. Means a lot that you're willing to take this extra time out of the day.
Yeah, it's definitely a juggling act when I come home because of, you know, traveling for work. I'm gone for anywhere from like 3 days is like a light week. 5 days is kind of like a, you know, a heavy week as far as travel goes. So like she's almost kind of a single mom when I'm gone because, you know, we live out on this farmstead. So we're 45 minutes from anything. And she's kind of just holding down the fort by herself, taking care of the cows, the chickens, and, you know, and cash. So when I come home, I like hit the ground running. Like it's not like, hey, I've been on the road. I just got off a flight. It's, you know, I'm tired and I'm going to just, you know, play video games and, you know, check trail cam pictures for a couple hours and kind of charge. I'm like, I come home and it's just like pick up the baby and, you know, we're off we're going. Cause like, there's a lot of stuff that she can't get done when I'm gone, you know what I mean? Like it's a challenge to do the groceries and you know what I mean? And she does an amazing job. Like, I don't know how she's able to do it as well as she does, but when I come home, I definitely am trying to like
make up for time lost. You know, one, I miss them, but like two, then it's like, man, like you've been an all-star. Like I need to help pick up my side of this deal too. So
now here's the question. What's the bigger challenge, managing a free for all in the ring or managing a toddler?
So he's not a toddler yet.
Not quite yet.
So right now the ring definitely, but like he's on the verge of walking. So he's like in the stage of like pulling himself up onto everything. And like he just this morning, he got up into like a bear crawl position, like on hands and feet. And then from there, like did like a hip hinge and stood all the way up. And I looked at Sarah and we were like, oh man, like this is, he's about to start walking. And like for at that point, it's all bets are off. Cause like she's like a crazy savage person, on her own. And like, I'm myself, and like my mom has always told me, she's like, you know, you're like, I didn't walk as a child. I went from crawling to running. And like, I'm sure that's what Cash is getting ready to do. So I'm just, we're, you know, trying to pad up like brick corners and stuff around the house. Like,
I was going to say, it's time to get all of the foam on the corners, right?
Yeah. And like, you know, and Sarah and I, like, you know, he's going to have a very different life than I did. Like I grew up in the city of Cleveland, like my street had numbers on it, you know, and I was, we always joke, and like Sarah grew up on a farm. Like she grew up on a farm outside of Louisville. Like, you know, our first interactions with firearms was very, very different, you know, and we're excited like that he's going to grow up kind of in this rough and tumble outdoor life. You know, I'm a late onset hunter, all that stuff. So like, we're definitely kind of letting him get dirtier, and he's probably going to fall down and get, you know, banged up more just as a kid, because we're going to let him be a kid. We're going to let him be wild. And that's not necessarily how people kind of do parenting these days, but you know, I feel like that's really important for us. And that's a big reason why we moved to Cleveland and why we moved out to a farm. And we wanted this experience for, you know, that Sarah got, that I never got, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like that's an important thing, that we want to raise our kid like that.
Well, you know, it's funny, like you talk about that. I grew up, in a very similar way. I grew up in the suburbs, and I'm an adult onset hunter as well. And, you know, I didn't start hunting actually until about 5 years ago. And you know, it's funny you mentioned, you're like, yeah, we're 40 miles from anything. I just moved about 2 months ago, moved out to the middle of nowhere, Montana, from the city, 40 miles from the nearest town. You know, I'm getting into the kind of homesteading stuff. Starting to learn about it. This is, you know, I moved right before winter, so there's not a ton I can do at the moment other than batten down the hatches. I look outside and I'm seeing it just dumping snow at the moment.
Oh yeah, it's actually clear today here, but it's supposed to start snowing tomorrow. But like Montana's like the Wild West, man. That's awesome.
I'm really excited to kind of enjoy my first winter out here. And I'm such a cold weather guy. I mean, this is definitely going to be an experience. I say I love cold weather, but when the wind starts picking it up and it starts dropping to like negative 60, I might question my decisions come January, February.
So there's no such, I mean, there's no such thing as weather being too cold. You just don't have good enough clothes. You know what I mean? Like it's you're able to sustain, like if you have good gear, like the weather is much less of an issue. And that was a thing that I learned, you know what I mean? Like, but I grew up in Cleveland where it's cold all the time. So like my winter coat was like a hoodie. And like, if it was really, really, really cold, then I would put a hoodie on and like a work jacket, you know, like obviously going out and sitting in a tree stand for 6 hours at a time or something, you gotta layer differently. But like, so for me, like it was whatever, but like, yeah, there's not too cold. It's just, you just don't have the right clothes on.
And see, that's one thing I've always kind of in a similar way, I always told people, I'm like, here's the deal. When it can be too hot, like there's, it gets to a point where it's so hot,
You can only take so much off.
Yeah. but too cold, you can continue to layer up. There's so much you can do to mitigate too cold. So I would any day rather have it be quote unquote too cold than too hot.
Oh, couldn't agree more. Yeah.
So, yeah, well, you know, I'm really excited to kind of get into this homesteading stuff. And you know, when I first reached out, I didn't realize how involved in all of that you guys were. Sure. You know, I was kind of coming at it from more of the hunting aspect. So I was actually, as I started looking into your guys' background a little bit more, I got really excited because I'm like, oh, I get to learn stuff now about more than just
sure stuff that you want to do. Yeah. What type of homesteading are you looking to do?
I'm not totally sure. So I bought this property. It's 7 acres, 40 miles in the middle of nowhere. I'm surrounded by farmland. Basically, you can see my place. It's so flat where I am here in Montana. Sure. You can see my place for about 3 miles. If you know, you can just pick it out in the distance. And I'm kind of doing a mix where I'm trying to bring back a section of a few acres of the property, like plant a bunch of trees. I actually want to put in a lake that I can stock with fish, like a little half acre, three quarter acre lake or pond. You know, and then, but then I also, I've got a barn, I've got a workshop. I want chickens, I want goats. I'd love to have, you know, maybe a pig every year that I can.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Slaughter. And so a mix of like bringing in wild game, on one section of the property and then raising my own animals on another section. You know, I want to plant some crops, you know, little, I'm it's 7 acres. So I'm a little bit limited in how much I can,
sure,
obviously, but enough to sustain myself and eventually a family, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, that's like, I think part of what, kind of my eyes got open to, because like, I, you know, like I said, I grew up in the city. This is not something that I ever really saw myself doing. Like if people from even 10 years ago would have, you know, said like, hey, you're gonna end up on a farm in the middle of nowhere, you know, raising your own beef cattle and you know, hunting and stuff like that, I'd been like, dude, you're out of your mind. No I'm not. Like, I just, you know, I live, you know, 5 minutes from a grocery store my whole life. But like when Sarah and I got together, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, like she was really more in touch with that type of lifestyle, and that's more of how she grew up and, you know, what she did. And like the longer we've been together, the more she talked about it, the more she, you know, we did some research, and then like just getting back in touch with our food system and like where our food comes from and like what goes into making our food and like doing the research. And like, I feel like what the tipping point for me was, a lot of people will do that research, and they'll see videos of like, you know, feedlots and slaughterhouses and like, you know, commercial meat, you know, factory farming stuff. And then they decide to go like plant-based, or they go, you know what I mean? They want to go vegetarian or vegan or whatever. And like, we saw those same things and we wanted to disconnect from the commercial meat market, but we went the other way. We want to be more in control of our meat. We want to find better meat. You know, I don't think the answer is no meat. It's finding better meat, good meat, sustainable meat. Because, you know, humans, that's what we're designed for. That's what our body as an animal, like as an animal organism, that's what we thrive on. That's what we're designed biologically to eat. So that's what we're going to eat. We just need to do it in a way that is more mindful and, you know, better on an individual level. So that kind of drove us here. And like, she wanted, you know, she was the one that pushed for getting a farm and stuff like that. And like, when we actually started this, when COVID started, you know, she had lost her job from WWE. They had released like, I don't know, 40 or 50 wrestlers and when COVID first started. Mm-hmm. And we had been talking about it a while, and we'd been planning and kind of like, but it was more like theoretical. And then when that happened, we're like, what are we waiting for? You know, let's go, let's pull the trigger. You know, so we got cows, we got chickens, you know, we were talking about some other things, but like, you know, we put crops in the field. And like our farm is similar. It's just, you know, we've got more, thankfully we've got more acreage. Like we've got 20 acres that are like tillable, but like five of that we've got our cows on in a pasture. And then we've got 30 acres that are wooded, and kind of doing, you know, we had some forest regeneration done where to kind of help that open up some of the canopy so that the undergrowth can come back up. And that's going to create better bedding for, you know, deer and, you know, rabbits and, you know, ground, like kind of all the ground creatures, you know, turkeys and, different birds or whatever, you know, just all the wildlife that kind of surrounds us in Northern Ohio. So like, it's definitely something that, for us, we were able to kind of divide that so we can have wild meat. We can have, you know, farm, like, grass fed, you know, farm grown meat on our land. And that's something that we've talked about. Like we've discussed, like maybe, you know, maybe doing a pig, maybe, something that we've actually been looking into a lot, which might be the next one that we jump off on is meat rabbits. Because the need, like the land required for them versus the yield that you get back is a really high ratio. Like it's a very small, you can, yeah.
They have a small footprint basically.
100%. So like for a smaller acreage, it's a really productive yield. And
they self-replicate pretty easily.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of sayings about that, but, you know what I mean? But they're very, and rabbit tastes good. Like, and it's a healthy meat. It's really lean. If that's what, you know, if that's what you're looking for. And like the way that we do our diet, we want to make sure that we have plenty of lean protein, but we also want to have plenty of, high fat, you know, kind of that beefy protein and stuff like that. So like, it's something that I think I'd be more inclined to do that than a pig right now. You know, just because from a, what we would need to do as far as infrastructure for a pig, like I'm not ready to jump off into that, but I feel like we could build a rabbit hutch and get, you know, some pastured rabbits pretty quickly, and be able to turn her around and manage that. So I don't know. I think that might be our next one, that we jump off to, but that right now we said we were going to do like one animal a year. Like we did like chickens and cows the first year. We did cash this year, and then maybe, you know, next year we'll do rabbits or maybe a pig. We'll see.
I definitely want to do chickens come this spring. 'Cause I figure that's like probably the best starting point. You get the eggs, sure. It's comparatively low maintenance.
Oh, 100%. And like, I was just going to ask you, are you doing egg chickens or meat chickens?
A little bit from column A, a little bit from column B.
Okay. So what I would recommend is, get high production egg layers. So like a lot of the meat chickens are, you've got to do kind of one or the other. Unless you're butchering the roosters. Like if you're breeding your own, what a lot of people do is if they have an egg flock, they'll, you know, like they'll keep the hens, they'll be producing the eggs. But you can only have so many roosters per so many chickens. Like I said, we've got about 30, we have one rooster, and even with that, some of our hens get overbred. So you don't want that ratio too high. Otherwise, yeah, the roosters are going to fight. They're going to kill each other. It's going to be a bad scene. So you can separate any additional males that are born and then you can butcher them. But our girls, like they're great, especially in conjunction with the cows, because we keep them on pasture, they're free range. So they go through, they help like fertilize the land, because they'll walk through and they, you know, separating the cow patties and like you know, helping to spread that stuff and fertilize and scratch everything up. So they're really giving back so much. And like I have way more fun. I've had way more fun with the chickens than I really thought that I would. Like I wasn't really sold on chickens. I definitely wanted cows, but I was like, I feel like chickens seem like a lot of work, and they just, you know, not like, I don't know. I don't really want them. I'm so glad that we got them, because we were just like, you're talking about it. We're like, nah, maybe, I don't know. And then we went to Tractor Supply and, came home with like I don't know, like 18 chicks or something like that.
It's
and like,
tough when you see them all there, like under the heat lamps so in the middle of the thing. You're like, it's the little chickens.
Yeah. And they were really fun. Like, they're really fun. They've all got their own like little personalities, and like different breeds kind of have different personalities too. And like, so we've got, I don't know, 4 or 5 different breeds in the coop. And then we've got a really, really good rooster. So when we first got them, we didn't have a rooster. We just had the chicks, or just the chickens. And then like, we lost, I think five or six to a hawk, like in one day. And it was rough. It was hard to handle. Like, Sarah and I both cried. It was, cause it was the first time we had lost anything on the farm, and it was rough. But then we've got a really good rooster now, and like, we haven't lost any chickens to predators since he's been around. Like,
so roosters will actually keep away predators then? I didn't realize.
So I don't know if they keep them away as much, but they keep an eye for them. So like, you'll see him, like, he'll alert, like if there's a hawk like flying, he'll give out a call, and you'll see from all over the farm, the chickens just run. And they like converge and just go into the coop, and he'll wait outside, and he's giving that call like as the girls are all running up, and then he'll go in. So like, I don't think he's necessarily going to fight off a hawk or like keep them away, but he definitely will keep an eye out. And like, it's, if he finds something good, you know, to eat, like if he finds a patch of something, you know, seeds or something we've left out, he'll like start eating it first, and then he'll give a call. And then all of a sudden you'll see, you know, 6, 8, 10 chickens run up, and he's telling the girls like, "Hey, there's good stuff here. There's good stuff here." Huh. So it's really cool to watch them interact and like see the rooster, do its job. And like that, I think that's the big part of like, you know, kind of going back. And I think that's going to be a theme in like all of what we talk about. Like, because it's a big theme in our life, like trying to let nature and animals be the animals that they're supposed to, you know. Like, I think that's the biggest problem with commercial farming is that we put animals on a human schedule, not an animal schedule. So like, you know, we're trying to get them as big as possible, as fast as possible, so we can get them to market as quick as possible and make as much money as possible with them. And that's not what they're designed to do biologically, you know. So animals are supposed to, they've got their own, you know, growth schedule and diet that they're supposed to eat and they thrive on. And a lot of times we, you know, we as in like commercial farmers or something like that don't do that because they're busy. They're making a living, and they're trying to earn a living and make a business out of it. So you've got to cut corners, or you've got to, you know, make things like, you're feeding the cows grain because they're going to get fatter quicker. They're going to grow quicker. They're going to grow bigger. They're going to put more weight on. They're going to be, and you can turn them around quicker and faster. So that's what you do. Like, Sarah and I have made a choice that we're not going to do that. We're only going to grass feed our cows. They're going to be grass fed. They're going to be grass finished. And the big difference, like from a commercial standpoint, like I understand, because like our calves aren't going to be ready for like 30 to 36 months to get butchered.
Okay.
Whereas if we were grain feeding, they could be ready in like 13 months. So like, it's a huge difference to like the amount of time they have to be supported on our land.
You're talking a year's difference right there. That is a huge,
or more. Yeah.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense.
Right. So from a dollars and cents standpoint, and that's why, like, for us, like our farm, we want to keep it small. Like, we want to feed us and our family. Like, that's what we can commit to. I don't want to make, I'm not trying to make money on the farm. We're trying to invest in ourselves, because like, what you eat directly relates to your health and your longevity and like your quality of life. So like, we're trying to take the best care of our animals that we can, because they're going to take care of us. And that's kind of like the trade-off there. Like, we're trying to give them the best, most natural life possible, because they're giving us the best, most natural life that they can. And that's like how we approach hunting. That's how we approach farming. That's how, you know, this whole circle of life thing is supposed to work.
No, I love that. And, you know, I love the idea of just being able to, you know, that's self-sufficiency. Like, that's the whole, I mean, one of the whole purpose of homesteading, I think, is getting back to that, to where, I mean, we've all seen it through the past couple of years between COVID, between the, I mean, all of the ships being and nobody unloading any of the ships. You know, I haven't had to go. I got my elk last year. I haven't had to go buy meat except for maybe chicken and some bacon now and again, and not even having to go buy that would be absolutely fantastic, especially living 40 miles from town. I mean,
oh, yeah, for sure. And it's something that, like, because when everybody got scared, like when, you know, when stuff started slowing down and like lockdowns are happening and people were like, you know, we're not sure about the supply chain, you know, there's going to be meat shortages and food shortages. Like, Sarah and I decided, like, we're not opening the freezer. We had, you know, a couple, you know, I don't know, 3-4 deer in there. We had 2 black bear. We had, you know, a couple wild pigs. Like, we had a very well stocked freezer from a successful, you know, year and a half of hunting, and that we were just kind of able to build up. And like, when all that happened, I was like, nope, not touching it. We're gonna buy, eat week to week, because we know that the stores have stuff now. And like, we thankfully our area never really dealt with any shortages, but I know I've got friends all over the country and like really in other countries as well that dealt with serious shortages where they couldn't find beef on the shelf. They couldn't find milk. They couldn't find whatever. And like, thankfully, like a lot of those problems aren't happening now, but like, I feel like through all this, we realize how fragile that system is. Like, if one delay happens, that could create a ripple effect that really affects people's lives. So like, it's better to be prepared, and it's better to, you know, to be able to kind of do things on your own, like, you know, be that self-sufficient stuff. So like, we're in a much better situation being prepared than being unprepared. You know what I mean? So like, we would definitely rather that. And like, now we're in a better place, or we're, you know, eating through the deer that we've gotten and stuff like that. But we're also trying to actively put more meat in the freezer right now. So
as far as I'm concerned, you can really never have too much meat in the freezer. Like, it's just, you know, and until you're running out of freezer room, but then, you know, you just need to buy another freezer. It's the problem. Right.
Yeah. And we're in that spot now, because we're like, okay, we've got, like, you know, like I said, we've got it's one of those, like, it's like a chest freezer. But like, it was here when we bought the house, because like, it's an old farmhouse, and like, the guy who we bought the house from actually lives like two farms over, and he's become one of our best friends. He's like an extended part of the family now. He was just like, guys, if you want this freezer, I don't want to move it. He's like, we had to use a tractor to get it down, like, you know, the cellar stairs. Like, he's like, this thing is, you know, I don't know, it's 400 or 500 pounds. It's a big freezer. It's an old school, like, big freezer. But that being said, we've come close, you know, it's not quite full right now, but we've come close to filling it before. So it's like, and like, we're going to have 3 calves that we butcher in like 18 months. So we're going to need another freezer, you know? So we're not sure. Like, there's some companies that make like, stuff, where you can kind of make a walk-in freezer, and there's like a little part in our basement where we might do that, or, you know, just get a freezer out the garage in the pole barn or something like that. So yeah, there's options.
I've considered the walk-in freezer route too. And now I've got a big old basement now with a few rooms, and I'm like, do I really need an extra bathroom?
So, and like, for the price of like, some of those companies are really doing cool stuff. I think the technology must have changed, or like I'm not sure what the advancement is, but like, when I was thinking how much it was going to cost, I was like, man, that's going to be astronomical. Like, that's going to be a small car. You know what I mean? And then looking into it, I was like, Oh, we could do that, because it's not that much more expensive than like getting a commercial freezer, like a, you know, just a regular freezer unit. So like,
yeah, I've looked at them. I mean,
there's options.
They're so user friendly with those like kits for the window air conditioners, even that.
Yeah, that's what I was looking at. Turn it in. You're probably looking at the same company.
Oh yeah, I think what Mr. Cool or something is what they're called or something.
There's that. And then there's like You Cool It. Yeah. There's, I don't know, Instagram, like, man, they get me all the time.
Oh, geez. It's bad.
Because like, I'm a gear nerd. Like, I love researching different gear. I love, testing stuff out. Like, I'll buy stuff sometimes just to see, like, oh, hey, I might like this. This might be cool. And then it doesn't. And then I'll either give it to somebody who I know will use it or resell it or whatever. But I've got at all times kind of like a small, like, influx, outflux of things that I'm like, ooh, this is a cool thing. I want to test this out. So, like, because of that, because I'm always researching that stuff and looking at it online and shopping, like, I feel like Instagram and Facebook just have me pegged. Like, they just know exactly. And they're like, hey, dummy, this is a thing you want to spend money on. And I was like, ooh, yeah, I kind of do. So.
Oh man, I feel personally attacked by this conversation right now because I relate to it too much. You know, it's funny, you were talking earlier, and anyone that's listened to the podcast for a while is probably laughed when you said this, because I say it almost word for word all the time. If you had talked to anyone that knew me 10 years ago, or if you'd even talked to me 10 years ago and said, like, yeah, you're going to be living on this farm out in BFN, Montana, you know, and you're going to be this bearded, tattooed, you know, guy that goes hunting all the time, I would have laughed you out of the room. Anyone that knew me would have laughed you out of the room. And because I was wearing like my 3-piece suits and driving a little roadster convertible and working in advertising in Los Angeles and like this whole thing. And yeah, fast forward 10 years, it's a wild turnaround. And I think it was very confusing for a lot of my friends that have known me for a long time. Sure. You and your wife are public figures, I think would be fair to say in the slightest. And you know, what kind of reactions from, whether it's, you know, maybe, I don't know, like other wrestlers or your fans or just the general public, what kind of reactions have you gotten to this new lifestyle or to hunting, or, you know, what has been the feedback?
that's a can of worms.
I love cans of worms.
So in the locker room, and among like wrestlers and friends, like, everything is supportive. Like, I've had, conversations, cause there's a couple like pretty prominent like wrestlers that are vegans, and like, I've had like one-on-one conversations with them and talking about it. And like, the reasons that they're vegans are the same reasons that I'm hunting. You know what I mean? Like, so like, we have that common ground. We just arrive to a different answer. You know what I mean? They say, yeah, you know, whatever, you know, their math came up one way, my math came up the other. So like, you have that commonality and you can have those conversations and that's fine. People online, however, I don't think are capable of having that level of intellectual conversation, because when they see something that they slightly disagree with or feel is not aligned perfectly with their worldview or whatever, man, they just go instantly into attack mode, where like Sarah, the first time that she posted a hunting photo, she lost 10,000 followers, like 10,000. And it was within a week. And like the level of people that came out of the woodwork and were saying like the most violent and vile things to her, because she, and like, we were very careful, like, when that first, because like, we didn't know, like, we knew that there could be some pushback and we knew that, you know, like, hey, we should probably be careful with this. And like, you know, because we're public figures, like, we try to be very neutral with like any type of like, anything really, like, we're like, we want to make, you know, we want to appeal to a wide variety of people, because like, our business is very dependent. It's in entertainment. Like, yeah, it's not my job to be espousing, you know, personal political beliefs or whatever. Like, I'm not supposed to be a divisive figure. I'm just supposed to be able to, like, you should be able to watch our product or watch me do what I do and forget about the rest of the world for, you know, even if it's 5 minutes, whatever, like just kind of like be like, hey, I just want to be entertained. And like, we're going to stay there. So like when we
as a character, you're supposed to be divisive in the ring when you're talking, exactly. smack. That's right, about as divisive as you get. Not as a person.
Sure. And so like, then we're, you know, but we're very careful that like we took this like black, and I actually took the photo, but it was like a black and white photo. And it was like, you know, very artistic, and like there was no blood or gore or anything like that. You could just see like she was like kneeled down in front of a deer and like had her hand on it. And like it was a really artistic photo. It's on her Instagram, but like it was the first hunting post that she posted. And I mean, people just came out, like thousands of people were coming out to like comment and be like, you know, I hope you die. Like someone should hang you up like this. And, you know, to, you know, like people are like, you know, someone should hunt you and eat you, or like whatever, like, why don't you eat your dog? Like, you're just an evil person. And like,
I feel like women get it so much worse than guys do too.
So it's funny that you said that, because that was actually the next thing I was going to say, because then like after that we were like, all right, like if people are that aggressive about it, like kind of screw you, like it this is something that we believe in and something that, you know, is part of our lifestyle. We're not going to hide from it anymore. Like if we try to be respectful about it and try to be like, you know, whatever, just artistic with it or whatever, like, and you're still going to react that violently, and don't even want to have any conversation about it, or don't want to respect our belief or respect our space or whatever, and you're going to make death threats, like, well, then we're going to go hard. And like then I posted pictures and I had, you know, blood on my hands or whatever. And like the level of hate that I got wasn't even probably 10% of what she got, which is crazy that like, people think it's okay to like attack females like that in the hunting space, but in general, like in lifting, it's the same thing. We'll post a lifting video, you know what I mean? And people are like supportive of me and then super aggressive, not supportive of her from whatever, like, you know, cause she lifted the whole time she was pregnant. So people would be judging that, after she's pregnant, like they're, you know, now they're judging that for whatever thing. So like the fact that like people think that like they just have the authority or they have the right to like attack women and disparage women or whatever, because you have the safety of the computer is just frustrating. So like, unfortunately for like, as a defense mechanism, I think like what's happened for us is like, because people ask, like, you know, I have a conversation like this, or, you know, our parents or family or somebody is like, man, how do you deal with all that? How do you deal with all like people, like, you know, all that hate online or all that, you know, people talking all this stupid stuff. And it's just like, it just becomes, you become numb to it. Like you just have to turn it off. Like either you're not reading comments or you're not, you know, responding or whatever. And it's just like, you just become numb to it. And the problem is, you becoming numb to the bad, you also become numb to the good, because then people are like, oh man, this is awesome. And yada, yada, yada. Could you send me XYZ, or could you do this thing for me or whatever? And I'm like, I'm always like, all right, like, I know you're saying this good, but like, is it really good? Or are you trying to get something, or, you know what I mean? So it's like, it becomes that, like, you just become numb to all of social media, which is fine. Cause like social media is a tool that like, really, I don't think people should be as deeply invested emotionally into it as they are, but like, it's a wonderful thing to connect with people and to, you know, bring people together and like stuff like that. So like, we've made some great friends on social media, but at the same time, like, there's some really evil things said and done. And I think people just use it, you know, if they're not happy in their life and they find any excuse they can to kind of lash out and try to make themselves feel better. It's just, it's frustrating to watch people do it to her. Like for me, it doesn't, you know, you say whatever you want to me, like I got thick skin and I just ignore it. But like, it's harder to ignore it when it's to somebody that you love and care about.
Well, and it's wild. Cause you know, even if it wasn't for me, like necessarily like worse for women, which it clearly is. Like, I've seen it across the board. I've had a lot of incredible women on this podcast, and a lot of them have talked about that. Like, and I mean, you know, we're talking like a lot of them are mothers, and like, oh, I hope blah, blah, blah happens to your child and this and that. Like, seriously disturbed individuals. There's no other word for it other than twisted and evil. But like, even if it wasn't worse, but just seeing, like, I'm the same way. You can say whatever crap you want about me, but the second you say it about someone else I care about, like my family or one of my friends, or, you know, I've had people come after people that I really care about on social, kind of in that same way. And I won't give it a second thought if it's about me, but the second it's about someone else, I get so heated and I'm like, I have to pull myself back. Cause I'm like, they don't need me to go in and rescue them, but I don't need to white knight this shit at all.
It feels like you can definitely get caught up in that. So like, we just focus on the positive, you know what I mean? Like, I think one of the best things that we've done with social media is we've not backed down from that. Like, we're just unapologetically hunting and homesteading, and we're going to be in that world. And that's just become part of our social media. Like, if you don't like that stuff, don't follow us. You know, like, obviously I'm going to post about wrestling. Obviously I'm going to post about working out and, you know, our son and, you know, other things, like, because I feel like people who follow us because of wrestling want to know who we are outside of the ring just as much as who we are in the ring. And like, because we're so passionate about hunting and homesteading that like, we're going to post about that. And I've had some really fantastic conversations with people about like, hey, I didn't know that. Hey, I didn't know that, you know, hunting was so much about conservation, or, you know, why you do a certain thing. And like, I really try to make sure that like, I'm educating when I post, or I'm educating as I talk, or as I, you know, discuss things. So like, with it can be like, social media can be so powerful and so positive. So I just try to focus on that and not, you know, the negative, like just kind of try to let the negative go out. Because it's going to be there. Like, people are going to talk shit and they're going to be disrespectful. There's only so much you can do. So like, no matter what, like, these same people would never say anything to your face. Like, it's not, you know, it's not like what they would do that in person, but like, they're just trying to get a reaction. So like, by completely ignoring them, like, that is that's the only way you can get victory from empty people online. So like, but like, with that, like, we tried to just focus on the positive, you know what I mean? Just constantly, because like, we do have a good life. We're very happy. We're very fortunate. We're, you know, we're healthy. We're able to pursue passions. And like, if there are other people that like, kind of take inspiration from that, or like understand that, or take encouragement to pursue their own passions, whether they align with ours or not, you know what I mean? Like, that is the power. That's a positive power of social media. So like, as much as it's a bad thing, it can be a good thing. So it's just like, what you focus on, you know what I mean? Like, I could go and find the comments and be like, man, this is terrible. And God, this is bad. But like, at the same time, like, you know, without social media, I'm not having this conversation with you. So like, it's a thing that like, it's what you make of it, you know?
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Well, it's like you look at it and social media and kind of the world we're in now, it allows you to be an ambassador to people that would have otherwise maybe never been exposed to this. And, it, you know, I mean, you look back, like I grew up watching professional wrestling as a kid, you know, I mean, I grew up watching Hulk Hogan and Macho Man Randy Savage and
me too.
You know, Jake the Snake Roberts and all these guys, sure. You know, I couldn't tell you Jack about what their passions were, what they were into, like nothing like that. Like they were literally, they could have might as well have been Iron Man and Captain America, like fictional character, you know, like that don't actually exist, like as far as people. And I couldn't tell you what mattered to them. Like they had no, effect on my life or anything that I they brought no added value to me other than entertainment, which is, I think it's so cool that this allows you then now to have more of a platform, because you're not going to go in the ring and be like, yeah, I got this belt thanks to some great training and that elk steak I ate, you know, getting me some great protein that I harvested myself. People be like, what the hell's going on, bro? I mean, I'd be out there being like, yeah, elk steak, but you know, you're not going to be able, you can't do that in the ring. That's not part of the show. Sure. But people, again, that are able to follow you, it's opened up so much. And I think that is so cool. And how you present it and the whole, you present such an awesome picture of it too, between not only, you know, the hunting, but again, the homesteading and how that all ties together. And then how you, one of the things I loved going through your social profile was all the pictures of like you raising your son in it. You know, like you're out there, you know, you're out there in your camo and you got your son strapped to your chest, you know, or,
yeah,
you know, you're tending the cows and he's sitting there watching you. And it's so cool to see all of that.
So, and I feel like that's something that's really important. Like, so there's two things right there, like to unpack. Like, I feel like social media really has allowed us to bring that curtain back, you know what I mean? From public figures, from other people, like, and really kind of show that, like, movie, like you're saying, professional wrestlers, professional athletes, movie stars, you know, whoever, it's, so, you know, somebody in a band, like, you never knew anything beyond that. What you saw in the spotlight. Now you can really go deeper and kind of pull the curtain back and say, hey, this is who I am in my real life. And this is what I believe. And this is what I do. And sometimes it's something that you want to see and sometimes it's not. And that's fine. And then you can kind of make that decision based on like, oh, cool. This person isn't really somebody that I want to be following or whatever. But like, for me, you know, for me personally, and for that, like, you know, personal brand or whatever you want to call it, like, I feel like it's really important to use that platform and like we were saying before, like educate and show that like, this is how we live. This is why we live. And this is why we're raising our son in this environment and in this culture. Like, you know, like I was not raised that way. Like, and that's not to say anything bad about how I was raised, but like my parents just weren't involved in the outdoors like that. Like, you know, we went camping every summer, and, you know, we play outside, but like I grew up in the city. And then like, when I also,
you're like reading my biography right now. It's like, it's a trip, like word for word.
Like, yeah. It's like, you know, and then we moved when I got a little older, like, you know, we moved to the suburbs and like, I never really, like, I'd play outside, but like, I didn't go in the woods. I wasn't, you know, exploring or, you know, boating or anything like that. And like, you know, I had cousins that, that like hunted, but like, I was never, that's not something that I ever pursued. I played sports when I was a kid and I, you know, that's what I did. I played sports. I was into music. I, you know, I did all that stuff. And it wasn't until I got together with Sarah that I really got interested in it. And like, cause she, like I said, she grew up hunting. So she, when we were going to get, we were planning our wedding, we were putting everything together and she got back. I don't know what happened, but thank God it did. Something sparked in her that brought her back to hunting. She got interested in it again. And I think she got this idea that she wanted to take a deer and serve it at her wedding. That was, that became something that she wanted to do. And like, she was like, that's what I'm going to do. And so she, you know, got a crossbow. She, you know, started looking into avenues of how to do it. And like, cause nobody in her family was into archery at all. Like they were gun hunters and they were, you know, whatever. And she had never actually shot a deer. She you know, kind of grew up in a more traditional family values, like the, you know, grandpa and the uncles hunted, and you would help on the blood trail. You'd help clean the animal. You'd help prepare the animal and stuff like that. But like, that's all you would do. So she got a crossbow. She, you know, her dad had a couple acres at that time. And like, she was like, hey, I want to come out and hunt. And he was like, well, shit, I'll hunt with you. So he put up a couple tree stands and got himself a crossbow, and they went out and they hunted for, you know, whatever, for like 8 days or something like that. I mean, she was dedicated. She was like in a row, like every day, morning and night, she went out and she would, you know, the one morning it was like had iced over, like freezing rain and all that stuff. So she brought like a spatula to the tree stand. She's scraping ice. You know, her dad stayed inside, like drinking coffee. He's like, you're crazy. I'm not going out today. And she's, and you know, but it became a mission. Like she was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to take a deer. And on, you know, one of her last days there, she took a deer and she, you know, we served it at the wedding. Like that was a big thing. And like kind of in that journey, I was like, you know, it's cool that you want to do this, but I didn't really have any interest in it. I was just like, you know, it's your thing. Like I'm happy for you. I think it's cool.
Supportive husband.
Yeah. Just whatever. Like, you know, and that's cool. And like, that's kind of how, you know, she and I work. Like, it was like, hey, like you can do this thing. Like, that's fine. Like, but like the more she talked about it, the more she got into it. And then like, once we had that deer, at the wedding, and I was like, man, like hunting is food, like, and getting kind of understanding that connection that I never really got before. And then like, she bought me a crossbow for Christmas and we went out and it sat in the woods, and like, I didn't see any, like I saw some squirrels, you know what I mean? Like, and at that point I didn't even know if I could pull the trigger or I would pull the trigger. And like, you know, we talked about it and I was like, hey, like, it's cool, but like, it's still your thing. And then like, she had me watch, you know, she was like, I really want you to watch Meat Eater, because you know, this guy really explains why you hunt, what's in it, why, you know, what's the benefit, what's the, you know, whatever, like the, she's like, his perspective on it, I really like. So between that year we got married and the next hunting season, we watched whatever, 6-7 episode or, seasons of Meat Eater, whatever was out there. And then like, was through that, I found Steven Rinella online. I found, you know, Cam Haynes. I found, you know, Joe, like listen to all the Joe Rogan stuff. Like, and I was like, man, this is okay. Like at that point I was like, all right, we started buying like local meat. We started whatever. And right before that hunting season, we ended up with that farm, with the farm here. And I was like, you know, I think we moved in like October 1st or something like that. So hunting season had just opened in Ohio. And we went out and we hunted like every single day we were home. We were both on the road full time, but we were like, you know, this is it. We're both hunting. We're, you know, this is what we're going to do. So like, and I don't know, it had to be my 10th or 12th sit in a row and just hours in the tree and not seeing anything, just seeing squirrels and, you know, nothing. I had a buck walk by, and I hit him, and you know, I took my shot. It was a good shot, but he ran really far. It's funny, 'cause like that's my first ever deer. I was, you know, I don't know, it was 3 years ago, I think. And I had like the highest, I say like the highest highs, lowest lows, mm-hmm. all in this situation, because like I shot, like I saw him. I was actually, I dummy, hold on 1 second. So, I texted Sarah and I was just checking in like, hey, you know, it's getting close to sunset. Like, you know, I'm good, but you know, I'll see, you know, I'll text you once the light's up, you know, love you, whatever. And I'm going to put my phone away and this deer is walking by as I'm on my phone. And I'm like, man, I've been out here for so long, so many days, and I'm on my stupid phone. I'm going to miss this deer. But like, so I like real slowly tried to like put my phone away. I got my crossbow. He's walking. And like when I first saw him, he was in like a perfect shooting lane. Like, it was absolutely perfect, but I had my phone in my hand, not my crossbow. So mm-hmm. I wasn't able to do anything about it. So like I put that crossbow, you know, I put the phone away. By the time I got my crossbow and I got on, he was like, you know, he had moved, he'd moved, he's walking. He was, you know, I don't know, 25, almost 30 yards away at this point. And like, like Sarah makes fun of me for the sound. Cause he was walking and I was like, I'm going to lose the shot. And like, I go and in my head, I'm like, you know, I had like deer calls and all kinds of stuff in my backpack, not on me. And I was like, I'm like, I need this deer to stop. So I end up going meh. And like, he like froze and like broadside perfectly. And I shot him and I got so excited. I was just, I couldn't believe that it happened. So I called Sarah and she was hunting like on the other side of the property. And she was like, she's like, all right, I'm coming to you. And she like gets out of her tree and like runs to my stand. And like, I'm at least a half mile away. So she gets there and it's like, you know, huffing and puffing, like, okay, all right, let's go. You know, so we're, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 minutes after the shot, we go to start looking for him, you know, cause there's just blood everywhere. Like this is a huge, huge blood trail. So you start walking and blood's really good. Blood's really good. Blood's really good. And then it slows down and then it slows down and then it's not good. And then it's like pin drops. And then, as we're on the blood trail and as the blood starts slowing down, it gets pitch black and then it starts to rain. Like, and I mean like heavy rain. So I go from the most excited I've ever been to like hands on knees. I'm going to throw up, like just, oh my God. Oh my God. I just hurt this thing. I didn't actually bring it down. I'm feeling so guilty. And I'm like having like crisis of faith. Like I can't believe it. I can't believe what I just did. Like, you know, how, and like Sarah's on a mission. She's like, no, we are going to find this deer. Like if we have to stay out here all night, we're going to find this deer. So like and like our two personalities are like completely shown in this, in what happened in this moment. So like from the last point of blood, I mark that. I leave a flashlight up. So like I can see where the blood is. And then I take my spare flashlight because I have one. I've also given my second spare flashlight to Sarah, who forgot her flashlight at the front. I think I might've given her my headlamp, but to where she, cause she left all of her stuff at the front of the woods because she was so excited. She ran over,
just sprint over. Yeah.
Just sprinting over. Yeah. So I give her, you know, the other light and I've got my backup light. And, I start like a very systematic, like I start going out on not quite grid searching, but like spokes of a wheel. Like I just start going out and then I come back and then I come out and I go back and I'm going, I don't know, 30, 40 yards out. And then I'm coming back and I start going spokes in a wheel, trying to find the next point of blood. Sarah just starts like going back and forth. Like she just is taking the like just full set, like just, I can just see her flashlight in the distance, like back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And like, I don't know what she's doing or where she's going, but she's like on a mission. She's like, no, we're not leaving this woods. So we're combing through this wood line or this, this little pocket of woods, where the deer had gone. And like, as I'm coming out on one of my wagon wheels, her flashlight, it like, we kind of like intersect and like her flashlight shines across a little, like a glowing thing of white. And I'm like, and you know, move my flashlight and the deer's down. And like, we, you know, she turns into a frat boy. She's like, we freaking found it. you know, and then at that point, like, cause I was like so upset that I just wounded this thing. It was my first ever deer. I was like, you know, I was excited to hunt. I really wanted to harvest it, but like, then I was feeling guilty, but then now back to high because we found it. And I just like almost collapsed. I'm like, man, this is intense. So like, then I, you know, I cleaned them, gutted them, like Sarah walked me through it, but like I cleaned them, gutted myself. Like she wouldn't help me. And I didn't ask for help because it was my responsibility. And then like I dragged that deer out like 400, 500 yards from the woods to like, till we got to a point where, we could get a side by side there. And like our neighbor came to help, our neighbor Chuck, who we bought the farm from, he was so excited. He came, you know, in his side by side to, you know, because we didn't have a side by side at that point. We just bought the farm like 2 weeks ago. So we threw the deer in the back and get him hung up in the pole barn and stuff like that. And I was just like, and then like, we took him to the butcher the next day. We got the meat back, I don't know, 4 or 5 days later, whatever. And my parents came over and we served them. I cooked up deer and we served them like a meal from the deer that I had harvested in our woods. And it like hit me like all like full kind of came full circle. And like, because they're eating this meat that I provided, and like, you know, Sarah's eating it, but like my parents are there. And I was just like, it really connected at that point. Like
there's nothing, there's nothing like that.
Nothing. No other feeling I've ever had, like really compared to that moment of like crystal clarity. Like this is right. This is good. This is, you know what I mean? Like this is a part. There's some kind of primal thing that happens when you take direct connection to your food. There's something, like I said, the only thing that I can describe, there's a primal satisfaction that happens, as a human, as an animal, as a something, that when you take that hunter gatherer thing and do it for real. It's like something that I've never experienced before. And like, I honestly, like thinking back on it and being like perfectly honest, like I didn't know how I'd feel when I pulled the trigger. I didn't know how I would feel when I saw the deer. And I went the roller coaster, you know, I went up and down and I was, you know, freaking out and then happy. And then, but like when it came full circle, I was like, man, I get it. I understand. And like, we've kind of restructured our life to kind of follow in this footsteps. And now we're, you know, homesteading and, you know, we're going to be butchering cows and, you know, still a ways off, but it's going to happen. And like, I know that we'll cry when that happens because, you know, like I would rather suffer so that they don't, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if that makes sense. And like, I think it's a hard concept for people to understand who like are so disconnected from their food. Like people on our social media that will comment and tell us like, we should just go get our meat in the grocery store where no animals are hurt. Yeah. That's a real thing. That happens like almost every time we post something. Mm-hmm. But you know, where no animals are harmed, go, you know, just go get the package of steak from the store. But I don't want those animals to suffer. I want them to live the most healthiest, happiest, most natural life they possibly can until that last moment. And I want that last moment to be as painless as humanly possible. So like we train like crazy so that we're prepared for that and we're capable of doing that. Like where, you know, because that first year that I hunted, I would only hunt with a crossbow because I was not confident enough with a compound bow to hunt with. Like I was shooting fine at 20, 30 yards, but I wasn't confident that under that pressure, I would shoot well, and I wouldn't shoot well enough. You know what I mean? Like I wasn't willing to take that risk because of my pride, because I wanted to hunt with a compound bow. I was like, I know that I can be ethical with a crossbow, so I'm going to hunt with a crossbow. And now I'm hunting with a compound bow, and I'm feeling very confident with my setup and with my, you know what I mean? This is my second full season with a compound bow. Very, very confident with my setup and with my, you know, my arrow systems and my broadheads and all that fun stuff. But like, it's a journey, like, and I, you know, we spend hours and hours and hours of our time, and we spent hundreds and thousands of dollars getting ready and putting equipment together and, you know, taking daily reps and building arrows and all this stuff to like be ready for that moment, because we owe it to the animal to be as good as we possibly can. Like they're sacrificing for us to live. Like I'm going to do my best to do my part and make sure that they don't suffer. And it's clean and it's quick and it's, you know, it's ethical as I can possibly make it.
You know, it's regardless of what your diet is and how you eat, something has to die for you to eat. Something has to
life,
die.
Life eats life. 100%.
You know, for hunters, and homesteaders, there's a direct connection. For the McDonald's crowd, there's not that connection. But something still died, whether you're buying a steak from the grocery store. And even if you're buying an Impossible Burger, if you are a vegan, something had to die. Yes, okay, plants died. But on top of that, all of that, you know, soy and fields or, you know, that are farmed out. Like I look around where I'm at right now. There, as far as the eye can see, it's all farmland. This used to at one point be habitat for wild animals. Yeah. You know, the Milk River right over here, you know, they'd go bed next to the Milk River and have water and feed and bedding and all of this. Now it's wide open and we see, you know, a handful of whitetails and I see some pronghorns sprinting across, but this is not habitat anymore. I mean,
no, and they lost their life, you know, secondary, they get pushed off the land, but also like, I'm sure, I don't know if you were there in time for harvest season this year, but when you are, anyone who says that like a vegetarian or vegan diet or, you know, just the vegetables that we eat, whatever, are like cruelty free or like death free, don't have any concept of what farming is. Because like, mm-hmm. if you're around for the harvest, those big like combines and harvesting machines and stuff like that, well, they'll come through that field and anything small and breathing in that space is dead. Mm-hmm. And they will chew up, you know, they'll chew up, you know, fawns, they'll chew up, you know, field mice, ground mice, you know, moles, voles, all kinds of whatever is there. You'll see carrion birds for weeks after harvest, because there's just so much death that is associated with harvesting a field. I mean, we're talking hundreds of animals. So like, is it more ethical because, you know, your diet kills small animals and my diet kills big animals? Like, at what point are we talking total death? Because if we're talking total death, I only kill maybe one cow a year. You know, you kill hundreds of rabbits for each, you know, Impossible Burger you eat or whatever. Like, I don't know. I'm not saying like whatever, but like it's a naive concept to think that any diet doesn't cause death.
Well, it's a, I don't know if you watch Yellowstone at all, but last week,
actually, we just started. So we just finished season one. We don't watch as much TV as we used to. So like, we're just getting into it.
So I won't, this won't give away anything, but last sure. week's episode, they had there's a quote where he was basically talking to a vegan and she was getting on Kevin Costner about basically having cattle and, you know, the slaughter of all these innocent animals. And there's this quote, I just pulled it up here. He's like, you ever plow a field to plant the quinoa or sorghum or whatever the hell it is you eat? You kill everything on the ground and under it. You kill every snake, every frog, every mouse, mole, vole, worm, quail. You kill them all. But I guess the only real question is, how cute does an animal have to be before you care if it dies to feed you? I was like, yeah. I was sitting, I'm like watching this by myself in my house, and I'm like, yeah, what's up? I'm like cheering. Yeah. My dogs are looking at me like I'm batshit crazy because I'm yelling at the TV, and I'm like, oh my gosh, that was such a good.
I mean it's the truth, but it's most people don't want to. don't want to admit that or see that. And that's like that, you know, it's what we've been talking about this whole time, is that connection to your food. Like, most people aren't comfortable with the weight of the fact that life eats life, you know? And like, I wanted to be like, I know that things have to die for me to live. So I want that weight. I want to feel that weight, that responsibility, that of that sacrifice. Like, I feel like that's an important thing to do. Like, if something's going to die for me to live, I'm going to take a hand in that process. And like I said, that weight, that responsibility, that like, I'm going to take ownership in that. Like, and some people aren't, you know, capable of doing that or whatever, and that's fine. But like, for me and my family, like, we choose to take part in that process and connect to that process as much as we possibly can. Like Sarah made an Instagram post recently because she's, you know, she's breastfeeding our son. And she said she spends her whole day either being food, taking care of her food, which is, you know, feeding our cows and doing all that stuff, or looking for food, which is hunting. Like, that's her entire day. It you know, and we've also said before, like, you know, we spend our entire day making dinner, like, whether it's feeding the cows or hunting or whatever, like, everything we do is preparing dinner. Like, it's so much more than just putting food in the pan and cooking it. Like, you know, you're in that process all day, every day. And like, I think that's been the biggest change, like, for us. And like, you know, it's been a positive change and a healthy change and like something that we believe in.
Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
And I think, you know, and I want to make it clear too, like, we're not saying this at all, and hopefully people have picked that up, to like, to be anti-farming or anything like that. Like, it's the idea is having that connection, and people don't have that connection, so they can fool themselves into believing that you know, they live a perfect, you know, murder-free life. And it's crazy. Like, I'm planning on going out and tilling up a field this coming year. Like, yeah. And stuff's going to happen. I mean, yeah, I'm not going to have a giant combine. So I'm probably not going to be chewing up any fawns or anything like that. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff burrowing down. I've seen all the crap that comes burrowing up out of all the little piles of dirt that appear in my fields. And I know stuff's going to get wrecked down there, but I understand that. I have that connection. I know it's part of it's to feed other wildlife. Part of it's to feed myself and to sustain animals that will then sustain me. And it's, like you said earlier, it's the whole circle of life. It's the whole concept of that connection. And I'm really excited to take even more of a hand in that and see that over the course of this next year. It's like, I'm excited. So pumped.
I'm excited. I'm excited for you, because it's something that, like, at each step I've taken, I'm like, man, like, I wish we would have started this sooner. Like, you know, man, this is so, like, each time we there's more, you know what I mean? And like, I feel like every time we go through that, it's like, oh, well, we're doing this. Like, what if we do that? You know what I mean? And like, Sarah and I have this problem that, like, we can't do anything halfway. Like, it's not like we got one cow. Like, we got two cows and a bull, and then quickly got a third cow. And so, and then all three of those cows had calves. So now we have seven, you know, and like, next year we're going to have more. And like, it's a, you know, we didn't start with like six chickens. We started with 18 and then quickly got more. And then, you know, like, we didn't kind of gradually go into hunting. We, you know, went full bore, and you know what I mean? Like, just, it's a, it's a thing that like, yeah, we don't have a half speed, and that's a problem. And that's
I guarantee anyone that knows me again is laughing listening to that, because like, you know, you don't know a ton about me. My very first hunt, that what I consider my first hunt, I went on a solo DIY archery elk hunt in like in Idaho, just by myself. Wow. I like bombed out there like feel like a dumbass, but I'm the same way. Like I have zero, like I don't know how to dip my toe in the water. It's like balls sure. to the wall.
Yeah, I respect that. Yeah.
Or nothing. So I love hearing that. I just know, yeah, I know the second I get into the chickens start coming out this spring, I'm probably going to be, you know, 20 deep.
Oh yeah. So, and my biggest piece of advice is invest in a good coop, because like you need something that is, you know, warm for them, because like they'll be good. Like if that coop is airtight, they'll be good all winter. You don't have to bring them inside or put them in the barn or you know, even really provide like electric heating for them. You'll need something for the water. We've got like, so for us, like your ultimate cold gets a little bit colder, but the difference between -5 and -40 for a chicken isn't all that much. You know, so like you'll need to do something so their water doesn't freeze. And like when we're off here, I can actually explain what we did if you want. With a good coop, they're gonna be safe from the elements, which is super important, but it also needs to be predator proof, because like most things in the animal kingdom have, you know, a fight or a flight option, and chickens aren't good at either. So you have to protect them from everything, because everything out there will eat chickens if they can. Raccoons, coyotes, you know, badgers, weasels, hawks. You've had
skunks come after them before. Yeah.
Skunks. Oh yeah. 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 And I mean,
I know I've got an owl and several hawks on the property. The owl lives in my workshop half of the time.
Sure. Sure. So the owl probably won't go after chickens, but the hawks will for sure. Oh, yeah. Hawks are going to be probably one of the biggest predators, but like I said, literally everything in Montana is trying to eat these chickens. and that's fine. And you just need to know that and kind of prepare for that. So like being predator proof is definitely the biggest thing, and like weatherproof, but like that's the, so we, you know, we did like, we went and we researched and got a really good coop. And like, thankfully, like, that's something we don't have to worry about. Like I know a lot of people that have chickens and they're like, man, I got to rebuild my coop. I got to do this. Or I got to, you know, raccoon pulled my thing up. Like I know myself enough that I'm not skilled enough as a carpenter to build my own. Cause you know, I get a bunch of buddies who are like, why don't you just build one? Why don't you just, you know, they're pretty easy. And I was like, well, cause I don't want my chickens to die. Like, you know, I'd rather spend a little bit of money, and cause they're my responsibility now. You know what I mean? Like the animals are only going to do what animals do. It's the humans that can decide to either put them in a natural state or an unnatural state. And like, that's a responsibility for us. So like, you know, we're gonna make sure that they're in a natural, safe state as much as we can, you know what I mean? Like as safe as we can make it for them. And then it's kind of on them to be their animal selves. But yeah, I would definitely, and a good coop is definitely worth the money.
I'll tell you, I won't totally bore everyone on the call with all the details of my barn, but it's actually set up for a large amount of chickens. Like it's got a spot inside for the, where I can set up a heated area for the,
that's
the
awesome. Chicks. So they're actually going to be in the barn.
Yeah. It's got a yard. It's got a whole section, perfect, separate room. Perfect. It's got like the whole like liftable gates for the nesting boxes and everything. So
hell yeah. Awesome. Like, so you're set. You're
I
good.
Walked in, I was nerding out on this barn. Like that was one of the first things, like, you know, you check out the property. I walked in. And it was a good thing that the homeowner was not in there when I was nerding out on the barn. And it was built in the 1920s, and this thing is solid as hell, man.
That's great. Yeah. So, and like, I get that, because like our property came with like two or three outbuildings, like two pole barns and like an old, like red farm barn. But like one of our biggest things to buying the property was the pole barn, because we immediately were like, we could put a really cool gym in there. And like Sarah, one of Sarah's like dreams was to have like a gym, like a garage gym. Like I always was just like, well, you know, I'm good. I like lifting with an environment and in a team and a, you know, whatever. But she was like, no, I want a home gym. I want a badass home gym. So when we moved here, we invested in it. We, you know, built it a piece at a time and like, you know, it was over a couple of years, but then lockdowns happened and we had a better gym facility than like most, you know what I mean? Like most, like yeah. whatever commercial box gyms that you go to, like we've got like amazing products, you know, like commercial grade, whatever gym in our garage. Cause we've got like a 35 by 60 pole barn, you know, that we converted half of it to a gym. And it's, you know, Sarah can do her Olympic lifting. I can do, you know, I can lift heavy stuff or throw sandbags or whatever, you know, whatever is on the agenda that day. But like, it's cool. And like for us, like when we came to the property, we're like, wow, we could put such a cool gym in here. So I get that about like nerding out over what's on the property.
I'm doing the exact same thing in my basement right now. Like I've got this whole, awesome. Like, it's like master bedroom sized room. And I immediately, the same thing, kind of walked down. I'm like, oh, this is going to be a big gym. And my only gripe is my ceiling. I don't have tall ceilings in there. So sure, if I'm doing like any sort of overhead presses, I have to find the spot that's in between the rafters.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Hey, man, you got to do what you got to do.
There we go. But awesome, man. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to hop on. One thing I always like to wind down with is, so say somebody grew up like we did, zero, you know, parents weren't into it. We didn't grow up in it. Maybe they don't have the benefit of access to a ton of people that are knowledgeable about hunting or homesteading or the outdoors or fishing, whatever, you know, whatever it happens to be. But they were always interested in it, but may feel a little intimidated. Maybe what advice or words of wisdom would you give someone like that?
So the biggest advice that I would give people is find a mentor. I think that's super important. Like for me, it was Sarah. She was able to kind of help me through all of those things. But like, I feel like one of the best things about social media, I know we talk, you know, bad about social media, but there's also really good things, is you can find mentors like yourself. Like there's so many podcasts out there now and YouTube shows, and, you know, just the amount of education out there is astounding. And like, I know that you make a point of like interacting with your listeners, and like other people make a point of interacting with their listeners to where you can ask questions. You can say, hey, I've got this idea, you know, da, 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 da. And you're going to take time, because you want to interact with your audience and you want to build your audience, you want to build your stuff, and you want to commit to helping the next generation of hunters, because like, that's going to help everybody. You know what I mean? Like, I think everything we're doing now is setting up for the people that are coming next to us or behind us. So like, find a mentor, ask your questions. And like, I think social media has given us such a good, like goldmine of access to people. Like you were saying before, like, you know, you were watching Hulk Hogan, but it's not like you could message Hulk Hogan and get an answer. You know what I mean? But where like social media now makes it so like you have a point of access to people that maybe know more than you, or have experienced more than you, or have answers that you have questions to, and you have a way to access them and a way to approach them that didn't exist in any other point of human history. You know what I mean? Like at no other point could you go, hey, Steven Ranella, you know, whatever, I've got this question. And chances are, if it's on one of his posts, someone's going to see it. They're going to respond. You know what I mean? Like it's definitely, I feel like, the more people that I've met and interacted with in the hunting community and in the outdoor world, like there's this genuine desire to help educate and help mentor new hunters and new outdoorsmen. So like everyone, I feel like almost without fail, goes out of their way to answer questions and goes out of their way to spread information. So like, if you have a question, you can either find a podcast that addresses it, you can find a YouTube video that addresses it, or you can directly ask somebody. Like it might be a comment section, or it might be a message or Instagram, you know, whatever, but like, and then you're gonna contact someone. You're gonna find out. And if the first person you ask doesn't respond quick enough for you, there's 10 other people out there who are talking about the same thing, who are, you know, doing the same thing. Like, I feel like that's the number one thing. Like, if I didn't have a mentor directly, you know, living in the same house with me, like, that would have been the biggest thing for me. And like, it was finding someone to ask those questions to, because, like, you know, the only stupid question is one you don't ask. And I feel like so many people are afraid to ask those questions or afraid to, like, admit that they don't know something. So, like, for me, like, one of the things that, like, changed, and I'm going to sidetrack this real quick, but, like, I got into saddle hunting last year, and I didn't know anything about saddle hunting. I'm scared of heights. And being scared of heights is one of the reasons why I got into saddle hunting, because in a tree stand, the only reason you know that harness works is if you fall. Like, mm-hmm. otherwise you're just kind of free floating and like, man, I hope this little rope is going to stop me if I fall. You know, saddle hunting, you're tied in directly. You've got constant tension, all that stuff. But I didn't know the first thing about it. So, like, I talked to the guys from Tethered. Like, I had reached out and just sent them a message on Instagram, and ended up building a relationship with some of the guys who run that company, because, you know, we just have conversations, and I'm asking them stupid questions. I guarantee I ask them so many stupid questions because, like, I didn't know. And this was the first time I'd ever used climbing sticks, the first time I ever used, you know, tree tethers and Lyman's ropes and all these, you know, all these different things that, like, come with saddle hunting. But now, like, I feel like we've got that relationship where they ask me stuff that, you know, I've got experience on, and I ask them stuff all the time. And I'm like, hey, like, could you help me with this? Could you help me with that? You know, or whatever, like, this is what I'm thinking. Like, this is the idea I have in my head. Is this going to work, or am I going to fall out of the tree and break my back? You know what I mean? Like, I think that finding that mentor is really, really, really the number one thing. And then the number two thing, and this is Sarah's advice, is just get out there and do it. Whether that's, like, you going deep into, you know, Idaho, which is maybe a little bit on the crazy side, you know, but, like, just a little bit. Like, there's public land within 30 minutes of just about everywhere on the country. Like, you can find, unless you live in Texas, somewhere where you don't have access to public land, but there's a ton of public land even in Texas, but, like, some of, you know, but less in Texas than other places, but, like, find a woodlot, even if it's 3 acres, you know what I mean? Find something and get out in the woods, because you're going to learn something every time you go out. Mm-hmm. And just go do it. So then try to find that mentor, then go find some land and go do it. And then ask that mentor, hey, when I went out and I did it, I screwed these things up. How do I not screw these things up next time? You know what I mean? And you're going to learn every time you do it.
Awesome, man. Well, if folks want to follow along, I know you guys have your YouTube channel, but then also just where in general can people find you online?
So you can find my wife and I do, like you were saying, a YouTube channel. That we haven't done any new content on YouTube in a while. We've kind of been focusing on the farm and the family, but we're going to be bringing some content back out. That's @RoseborgTV, @RoseborgTV on Instagram, YouTube. We also do have an Instagram. I'm Eric, Eric_WWE. You can also watch, if you like pro wrestling, or if you want to just be like, who is this crazy person that's been talking for a couple hours every Friday night on Fox is SmackDown. So you can see the Viking Raiders, and you can see me not hunting, but wrestling. If you want to see me hunting, go to Instagram and we'll post some stuff up.
It's, you know, it's funny. I just got to say it's like this weird trip, because, you know, I go through the Instagram and I pull some images to make the cover art. And so, you know, I'm going and I'm pulling a few, like, wrestling images where it's like, you know, you're painted up and you're, like, screaming and you're all jacked. And then, like, I'm like, okay, let's pull some. And then there's, like, the image of you, like, feeding the cows with the little hat on, and you're, like, smiling. And I'm like, this is so, like, it's like throwing me for a loop here.
Yeah.
It's an interesting dichotomy, I gotta say, yeah, the least. But
yeah it's, you know, I'm you know, a Viking in the ring. You know, we also do, you know, Viking stuff outside the ring, but we're, you know, yeah, it's a lot. So check out the Instagram, and we're like a three-ring circus. We got something for everybody.
Well, I love it, man. Thank you again so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
All right, y'all, that'll do it for this episode of The Wild Initiative. Make sure to check out the show notes page at thewildinitiative.com. Get links to everything we talked about in today's episode. Another big thank you to Raymond for taking the time away from his family to sit down and chat. I really enjoyed the conversation. I'm super excited to start working on my own property, my own land, get some chickens, some goats, maybe some rabbits. You never know what's going to happen. But y'all, make sure to go check him out. Give him a follow. See what he and Sarah are up to. Y'all, that'll do it for this week. Looking forward to next time. But until then, I hope this episode inspired you to get involved, get outdoors, and plan your initiative for the wild.
Thank you for listening to The Wild Initiative. Please take a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher. And head on over to thewildinitiative.com to get show notes, check out the blog, gear discounts, other podcasts from the Wild Initiative family, and more.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Every Monday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
In Wild Country, rules were not created by man. Don't miss Wild Country, Wednesdays from 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Primos, speak the language. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.